Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the latest Celtic Vlog podcast. This piece is being written on the morning of the 12th of September 2024. And the title of this article is Our Rivals Are a Trumpian Construct Beyond Any Ability to Change. Yesterday was one of the slowest days on this site in weeks, all because we didn't post an early morning article at 8 a.m. That would have given us momentum for the rest of the day. Now why didn't we post our usual article at that time? Well, I'll tell you why. It's because I was still in bed, having stayed up all night to watch the Kamala Harris-Donald Trump debate. And that was quite possibly the most extraordinary 2 hours that I have spent in a long time. Now, I've been watching American political debates since I was in my teens, and I have never seen anything quite like that. I'm not just saying what I wish I believed. After the Biden-Trump debate, I wrote extensively here and elsewhere that it was the worst performance I'd ever seen from a major presidential candidate. And I see that as someone who leans heavily towards Biden, and who believes that Biden has been a consequential president on a whole other scale. So when I tell you that Trump's performance in this debate was even worse than that, you know that I'm not speaking out of bias, but of long experience watching this stuff, and so you can take that to the bank. If you haven't seen it, I advise you to track it down. It will blow your mind. Beyond the lies we've grown accustomed to watching Trump, beyond the overblown hyperbole and grandiosity, which was clearly evidence of a deep-seated psychological issue, came statements so bizarre that to call them odd would be an understatement. They were off the charts, nuts. Amongst other things, he claimed that Kamala Harris is a Marxist, that Joe Biden hates her, that no one died on January 6th, and he blamed Nancy Pelosi for all the events of that day. All I did was hold a rally, he said. He continues to deny that he lost the 2020 election. And as crazy as all that sounds, it all seemed almost normal. Next to his claim that in certain American states they kill newborn babies as a form of abortion, and that in other states, immigrants are eating their neighbours' cats and dogs. It was supremely, spectacularly unhinged stuff. That debate subjected all of America to international mortification. But only half of America deserves to be viewed through that lens. Half of the country continues to function normally, grounded in some form of reality. It is only the Republican Party that should be deeply, deeply ashamed for ever having allowed this unhinged maniac, this ranting, raving clown car driver, to be their nominee, with all the dangers that he represents to America and the wider world. Now, there is a small cadre of Trump sympathisers who often message this site trying to get comments posted. Well, this morning I say knock yourselves out, guys. But before you do it, reflect on what the world watched the night before last. And if you still choose to do so, subject yourselves to the humiliation of revealing that you too lived down a rabbit hole, that you too swallow baseless lies and conspiracy theories, and that you're cheering on an obvious lunatic. It speaks volumes about your character, and what it says is not flattering. It speaks to your intellect in a way that is more damning than anything I could ever say. These are not normal people, any more than Trump is a normal candidate. And it's funny, because I've spent the last 2 weeks writing about people like this in the context of the club across the city. I've been writing about fans who spent a decade or more in the same retreat from reality, fact, logic, sense and truth. They believe things every bit as wild as Trump's mad idea that Haitian immigrants are eating cats and dogs. First up, they believe their club survived liquidation, even though the documents proving otherwise are there for all to see, and so are a host of newspaper editorials which our fans take no small satisfaction from reminding them about over and over again. They think they were the victims of a massive, all-encompassing global conspiracy involving the Labour Party, the Scottish National Party, members of the Tory Party, Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, the Judiciary, the National Press, and the heads of almost all of Scotland's senior football clubs. And they believe that this conspiracy was orchestrated at Celtic Park by members of our board. They believe that referees are biased against them, that the SFA itself is biased against them, despite years when that organisation was led by someone who concealed evidence of tax fraud on their behalf, the very offences for which they were eventually liquidated. The governing body even tried to put their Nuko straight into the top flight. They organised the premeditated Lord Nimmo Smith inquiry. Premeditated? I mean predetermined. And we have the side letter that proves it. That association was later headed by a chief executive who also believed that the governing bodies were biased against the club and actually wrote about that for a book that was published shortly after he got the job. They think Dundee's vote to end the season in the year COVID struck was part of another conspiracy, and that Dundee was somehow rewarded for voting in our favour. They attempted to bring down the executive leadership of the governing body based on that belief, even producing a dossier that was more dubious than the one Labour presented to the Commons to justify the Iraq war. Our own chief executive at the time, Peter Lowell, dismissed it as fantasy and rubbish after a single look. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. Their paranoia and their embrace of lies, even those lies which are easily disproved, are embodied in the two falsehoods that underpin the whole institution, the survival lie and the victim lie. But perhaps the greatest lie they tell themselves is that they are the biggest club in the country and that success and glory are theirs by right. They think that these are being denied to them, not because Celtic is a better run club with a better manager, better players and more resources, but because we've rigged the table, loaded the dice, marked the cards against them. None of this nonsense helps them. None of it makes them a better football club. In fact, it's precisely these comforting fictions that prevent them from doing the things that might actually help. It's the same with Trump. Had he accepted his 2020 defeat instead of disappearing down his own rabbit hole of paranoia, many of his current problems wouldn't exist. Let's be perfectly honest. This is a man whose entire life has been driven by grievance. Many considered him a fool from the day he descended the golden escalator at Trump Tower to announce his intention to run for president. At that point, Trump was a joke. His candidacy was a joke. Fresh from the whole Bertha controversy, the belief that he could win, or that he deserved to win, was so absurd that the whole thing was like something from a Marx Brothers film or some crazy reality-bending episode of The Simpsons. It wasn't something people took seriously. No one believed they would ever see him win. But he did win. He had the last laugh. He made his detractors look like the idiots. And he could have walked away at the end of his term because he was no longer seen as a joke. He may have come across as deranged, but he could have spent the rest of his life comfortably as a major player in American politics and a giant in the garish, demented remnants of what was once the Grand Old Party. The great and the good, if we're willing to call them that, of the GOP would have made endless pilgrimages to Mar-a-Lago. He could have launched Trump Media and run everything from right-wing TV channels to radio shows, and even gone to print media and challenged the big boys if that's what he had wanted. The plans were laid. We know the plans were laid. All he had to do was accept the election result and walk away. But in his madness and in his ego and in his total inability to accept defeat, he sowed the seeds of all his present troubles. The attempted coup on January 6th made him a clear and present danger to US national security and a threat to the Constitution. His attempt to hang on to classified documents when he refused to hand them back put him at risk of criminal prosecution that could see him serving decades in prison. Facing those troubles which he had brought upon himself, he re-entered the arena with the explicit intention of putting himself beyond the reach of the law by occupying again the highest office in the land. Imagine what the club across the city might have become had it learned the lessons of 2012 and accepted what happened to Rangers. Now, I wrote last week about how the years since represent a squandered opportunity that was in their hands. But it's deeper than that, of course, because if they had accepted the reality of their situation and that they were a club born from the ashes of one that spent its way to the grave, they could have taken their fans with them and embraced a different approach. Some fans, unable to accept the reality of that position, may just have walked away. But the core would have stayed, and the entire mentality of that club might be very different today. Imagine if they had fans over there who had accepted the self-inflicted nature of what happened before the administration and liquidation of Rangers. Those fans would have understood the need for the new code to operate within narrow financial parameters. They would have been free of the supremacist mindset that views winning as an entitlement. Their patience for a long-term project which rewarded faith and slow, steady progress would, in the end, have made them formidable opponents for us. But instead, from the very first game they played, they chose to embrace denial, deflection and hate, and the fiction that all of their problems were caused by other people. And just as Trump embraced his lie, they embraced theirs. Everything that has happened to them since was inevitable from that moment. And it's too late now to make them into something different, just as it is too late now to change who Donald J. Trump is. No matter what his handlers told him to do prior to that debate, his base nature overrode even his own best interests. On the day that he crushed Biden, he was riding high. On the day he survived the assassination attempt, I had a chat with my two best friends, two guys I've known for years, guys I met through political activism, Johnny Garner and Matthew Maher, and we agreed that all Trump had to do was act normal for a few months, to talk about uniting people rather than dividing them, and he almost certainly would have been elected in November regardless of what the Democrats had decided to do with their own ailing candidate. But Donald Trump is Donald Trump. And when Kamala Harris goaded him about the size of the crowds at his rallies, he spent 2 of the 3 minutes that he had to speak on his supposed strengths, and he rambled about that instead. And he then used the remaining minute to rave like a lunatic about people eating other people's pets. And if she wins this election, that is the clip that they will play over and over and over again. And for the first time at Ibrox, first time in a long time, there is a board of directors who have seen the writing on the wall and who know that re-engaging with reality is long overdue and the only way the club can function moving forward. The reckoning has finally come over there. The reckoning with a need to spend only what they have coming through the doors. And the result of that has been savage cost-cutting, the reduction of the squad to the level of a third-place challenger, and an almost universal acceptance that this title is probably beyond them, and maybe the next three or four as well. If they accept that this has to be done, they stand a chance of reshaping their football operation into something that actually works, something that does make sense. And in those 4 or 5 years, they may just give us something to think about. But as Trump is Trump, Sevco is Sevco, and Sevco thinks it's Rangers. What's more, they still believe that Rangers was real and not itself an artificial construct built almost entirely on debt, made to seem more than it was. So they can no more accept their position than Trump can accept he lost in 2020. They can no more tolerate being second, far less third, than he could keep calm in the face of Harris trolling on the debate stage. So when their manager asks for time, we laugh because we know they won't give it to him. When their board asks for patience, we slap our thighs and throw back our heads because we know that's a non-starter. When they talk about living within their means, we have no reason to fear that they might actually do it. The rabid support base, which has embraced all these lies and all the supremacist garbage, believes their new club was founded on the basis that it's the old one, with all the baggage that brings, and they are incapable of changing. What makes them this way? What makes them behave like this? Why do they believe it's better to live in these fantasies than accept the truth, even when the truth gives them their best chance of ever seeing a successful football club at Ibrox again? It's a question that fascinates me. But if I'm honest, I don't really care what the answer is, any more than I care what makes Trump the malignant narcissist that he is. I couldn't give a damn if his father was a bastard or what mental torments he endured as a child. Whatever sympathy I may have had on a human level was long since erased by the loathsome nature of the person that he became. I think it's critical for the betterment of his country and for the security and safety of every citizen on this planet that he doesn't get elected again. And I don't care what motivates the Ibrox fan base to behave the way they do. I know that tens of thousands of them sing about being there up to their knees in my blood and the blood of my friends and family members, and really that's all I need to know. I don't care where that sentiment comes from, and so I don't care why they believe what they do, but I recognise that those beliefs cause them more damage than they do the rest of us, and that's been demonstrated over and over again. At the same time, I fully recognise that some of their ideas are every bit as dangerous as the deranged nonsense Trump believes, and so there have to be checks and balances to ensure that that club does not behave recklessly and endanger itself and thus the rest of the Scottish game. But because they are what they are, I will never get tired of seeing these people crushed, embarrassed and beaten. And as amazing as Trump's debate performance was, the last 11 days or so have been every bit as extraordinary at the club across the city and every bit as deranged. I do think that Kamala Harris and Tim Walz will be the next President and Vice President of the United States. It will be November before we find out for sure. And if they win, they won't take office until January next year. by that time, I expect there will be a new incumbent in the main office at Ibrox. And whoever that is, by the time Harris and Walsh formally take their oaths of office, Brendan Rodgers, in accordance with his, will already have gone there in the week and beaten the new guy, and the cycle of destruction at that club will have already started anew. Because they are Sevco, and Sevco won't change. Ladies and gents, thank you very much, and I'll see you again on the next one of these.